Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome back to the Sofa Cinema Club. This is episode number 11. I'm Colton Smith, and as always, I'm joined by
Jack P. Shepherd,
Ben Price.
The Sofa Cinema Club is our podcast where we get together and we educate each other on films. Now, it's all about the films we should have seen, but we haven't. Each week, one of us sets a film for the others to watch, and then we come into the studio and we talk about what we loved, hated, and rated. Now, the beauty of our film club is that anybody can join in. All you have to do is watch along with the film at home and then join us every Thursday. This week's film has been picked by Jack and Ben, and it is Steven Spielberg's Schindler's List. But before we get into talking about the film, obviously it's a special day. It's Thursday, the 14th of January.
Yep.
Which, why is this a special day?
It's my birthday.
Happy birthday.
I think this is the first birthday I've had on the podcast, isn't it?
I think it's anyone's birthday.
No, we've had yours.
You had a birthday.
Did I? I'm so old, I can't remember. I've had so many.
We brought you that cake. Do you remember?
Cake and wine gums in studio.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I do remember. I do.
Yeah.
Second birthday, but your first on the podcast.
Yeah.
So a massive, you're going to have a massive do.
Massive do, yep.
How many people are you going to invite?
Well, I've got the Parisian ballet stars coming over and flying them in. They're doing the full show.
Sure. Outside, though, not in.
Outside.
You know what I mean? With masks on. It's not in. Yeah, so a bit of a lockdown birthday for you there, Shep.
Yeah, I mean, well, my birthday's always depressing anyway, because it's January, isn't it? No one's got any money.
Oh.
It's dark.
Oh.
It's cold.
Yeah.
And everybody keeps their distance, usually.
Actually, do you know what? You're right. I do feel a bit depressed now you're saying all that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Could you not change it like the Queen?
Happy birthday!
But I don't mind that. I have always liked that about my birthday, that everybody keeps their distance in January.
Well, they have to keep their distance
for various reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they have to now. And it was my daughter's birthday on the 13th.
Ah.
There we go. I don't think I'm going to tell her the depressing part of it. Yeah. I think she's still quite into the birthday.
Well, it's just because it's right after Christmas, isn't it? No one's got any money.
I know. No one's got any double presents. Not really.
Yeah, not really.
You wait till you see what Ben's bought you. He's gone all the stops this year, he has.
It will never fit in the pants.
I was amazed.
They won't be able to deliver it. What else you been up to?
Nothing. I have literally done nothing.
People listen to this podcast for the banter, don't they?
But I'm getting upset and annoyed with myself that I can't think of things to do to keep me occupied. It's just the boredom.
Day to day, you get dressed, you probably wash.
Yeah, I do all that.
Then what you up to after that?
If I don't have anything podcast related to do, I'll sort of just mince around on my phone for a bit, go to the supermarket,
play dominoes.
Yeah, play games on my phone, you know.
So lockdown number one, obviously, for Jack, was all about Lego.
Yep, I had that.
Lockdown number two was all about Assassin's Creed. So we need to find something for lockdown number three, don't we?
But you've been slightly out into the video game world, haven't you, in lockdown three, Coulson tells me.
Yeah, I've been on Grand Theft Auto. I've relived them.
Oh, well, there you go. That's it. You've got your head down there.
I know, but it's just a bit sad, isn't it, playing a game. You want to sort of, like, accomplish something.
A game you've already played
as well.
A game
you've already played.
Yeah, write a film.
Yeah.
A work of art or learn an instrument. What did you do? I learned how to rob a bank.
Yeah.
Fictitiously.
You do need something. You need a hobby.
People need to send in on one of those social things. What Jack can do.
Yeah. But also, you're the same, Coles. You had your running, and now that's gone. What are you doing?
now you've given that up.
Drag him down while you're low, Jack. I'll tell you what, he's not easy to live with at the moment. We've got the home gym. That was the big news, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, there's quite a lot actually going on for me. But I'm exactly the same as you, Jack. I think we represent most of the population. Like, Ben's fine. Ben's got work. Me and you at the moment, we're sat at home. We've not got any work on.
Yeah.
There's fuck all to do. It's lockdown. So for me, we've built a home gym in the flat, me and Ben. So we no longer have a living room.
Oh, okay.
The flat, it was already a small flat. We've got a kitchen. We've got two bedrooms and a gym, which is all you need, really. You don't need a sofa.
Not much room in the sauna. Always open.
And Ben's complaining about the membership prices at the gym.
Yeah, but I went, there's no pool. And he went, the keys. It's way too cold. It's a fortune, this gym. There's only two members, though, and the cafe's good. But that's quite a thing, isn't it? Because it's hard mentally after a while, isn't it?
I said to Ben yesterday that I was really, really finding it rough just because you can't see people. There's nothing to do. And obviously, for me, last year, a big part of my life became running. And at the moment, I've lost the ability to run. To be fair, my foot is feeling better and better every day, and I'm seeing a specialist tomorrow, so like, hopefully that is on the way back. But finding stuff to do in life and that feeling of being productive, that's the feeling that you can't quite get. That's why it's so great to come on and do the podcast. But the home gym has meant that I can at least feel like I've accomplished something with my day.
Something. Yeah, that's good. Something. That's good for you.
Because you don't even exercise really, Jack, do you?
No, I don't do that.
Do you get down, Jack?
No, I don't get down. As in what? Miserable?
No, yeah, a bit like, oof. Yeah, down.
No, I wouldn't say down. I'm a little bit pissed off at myself that I can't think of something to do.
Yeah,
that's all it is. I'm just like, come on.
It's that constant cycle, isn't it?
Yeah, I should be able to do something creative, and I can't. I can't really think of anything.
Yeah.
Whereas the first lockdown, I dicked about on Instagram, didn't I? Creating scenes from films and stuff like that, and the Lego and all that. But I can't really think of anything now.
It's hard now, isn't it?
I've blown my guns. That's what I've done.
Yeah. You've made the Taj.
Yeah.
And that's once in a lifetime. And it's dark. It's a bit cold. We're into the third one.
I've got writer's block. That's what I've got.
The block is you haven't even started. I haven't even written anything.
My suggestion for you, which would be really useful, is get yourself on the Open University and do a course in something like joinery or something like that, because that would come in really handy. And we'd all be able to utilise that skill. Get yourself a qualification.
I'm not really interested in that. I would like to know how to play the piano.
But that sounds to me, Shepherd, like you just like to know how to play it.
Yeah.
I don't really want to practice.
Yes.
I don't give a shit about that. Yes. I'll tell you what you want. You want the Matrix.
Can I skip to the end? I want the Matrix.
Right, I'm going to sit in the chair. I can play piano.
Yes.
What did Jack do in lockdown? He bought a level 8 qualification. Didn't have any lessons, just bought the qualification.
Wouldn't that be mint if you just download a chip?
Yeah.
And plug it in. Oh, look at that.
Imagine how good that would be. As if you just decide what you want to do and it's done.
I know plumbing.
God, it would have made last year a hell of a lot easier with the weight loss, wouldn't it? It would save me a lot of effort.
Yeah,
I'll buy it.
You just buy it. Ah, I know weight loss. Yeah, it's hard, I think. I think a lot of people are finding that now, aren't they? And the fact you can't really go and see anyone, even really see anyone outside. Yeah, it's not easy.
Have you got a story to lighten us up, Ben?
Got to lighten the mood here. And here we go, straight off with a COVID story. Had a COVID test. Thank you. Walked straight in. You have to wear a mask, don't you, and all that. And then the person on the desk has to wear a mask. And they walk straight in, she coughed. I was like, oh, is this a test? And I was like, have I now got it? Have I not got it? And then I go in and I get it, and then you get tested. went in. I don't think she saw the humour in that. I was up behind the mask. Yeah. My head had gone. And it was one of those quick tests. It's not, it's like a private test where they, 15 minutes, they tell you whatever.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, quite good. Anyway, so rapid. The nurse comes round. She comes out, spies me. Straight off, she knows who I am.
Hiya, Nick.
Hiya, Nick. Come for your test. You got the COVID? Well, no, I don't think I have, but I'm here. I just need to check quickly. But the person at the desk did cough. they must have tests every 10 seconds, mustn't they? They must every morning come in and go, oh, I'll just have a test just in case. So she was really good. She was, I mean, it's bloody clever. They open it all up. You do it yourself and you get like a long thing, earbud. And then it's either throat or nose. Now, what would you have? Throat or nose?
Throat.
Ooh, see, I've had a COVID test, but I had to do both on mine. And because I've done both, I'm going to say nose.
How far up your nose, though? Are you talking Egyptian hook?
What's an Egyptian hook? You're going to have to elaborate.
They used to pull people's brains out with a hook, the Egyptians. You don't know that.
I don't think it was that far, because you'd have the test. You wouldn't be bothered about the result. Because...
Maybe that's what you could do, Jack. Maybe you should do a history qualification.
Actually, do like Jack history,
P. Shepherd, actor and history lecturer at the University of Manchester.
I also play piano. So you stick it up. She said, you've got to stick it up. Uncomfortably high.
Oh, God.
So your eyes are watering, so it stops, and then you twiddle it round. Because I think a lot of these things is doing it right, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right up, eyes watering, onions, straight off. She gets the Q-tip, puts it into solution. She goes, right, I've got to time 2 minutes. I mean, it's all properly done. And then she says, I'm going to put it onto this thing, and it looks like a little test, little line, and you'll get one line, test is right, two lines... You've got it. If you don't see a second line, you haven't got it.
Right, okay.
It's a bit like...
Pregnancy test.
Yeah, I suppose.
It sounds like a pregnancy test.
Yeah, it's a bit like a pregnancy test. But that has an element of joy in it.
depending on the answer.
Yeah, this is like, oh, if I've got it. I mean, I really didn't think I had, but I thought, if I have. You know, you could be asymptomatic, could be anything, couldn't it?
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, okay. Oh, anyway, she said, yeah, oh, line's fine. Test worked. You haven't got it. Yeah. I went, oh. That was it.
Off to work then.
You'll say sorry for wasting your time.
Sorry. But look, better to be safe than sorry, isn't it? And, you know, you've got to check these things out.
I wonder if you had it and what her reaction would be instantly knowing that you've got it. Whether it'd be like that Monsters, Inc., you know, when there's that sock on that night.
We got a 221.
Yeah. 221.15 and all that.
Suddenly the shield comes down.
Shield comes, everyone
We've
runs
got a
in.
Hot one. Yeah. Oh, get him.
Get him.
What happened to Ben? He's been locked in Bristol Hospital.
Because when you're doing it, there's a 2-minute chat window. So she's got to wait and she was like, oh. Off back to the street. Oh, I went, right. Well, I don't know.
We don't know, do we?
I'm going to find out in 2 minutes.
Well, we are racing through series 3 of the Soph Cinema Club. Like I said, episode 11 already. So it is flying by. It's already our most successful series by a country mile. So thank you for listening to us in lockdown.
Yes. And do write a review and put those stars because it does help.
So seeing as Jack is... now a history lecturer, or at least is going to be studying
oh,
to be
no,
a history
don't
lecturer.
This on me.
And you know a lot about the Holocaust being a history lecturer.
I'll help you out, Jack.
Why don't you do the synopsis for Schindler's List?
Okay, synopsis for Schindler's List.
I think you can go really simple on this.
Yeah, I am going to. Definitely. Yeah. Just you
because
watch.
Because you could go the other way.
No, I'm not going to.
As long as the film.
No, I'm not going to.
3 hours, Sofa Cinema Club. Okay, go.
Synopsis, Schindler's List, try and say it, put my teeth in.
Say it again.
follows a businessman, a member of the Nazi party, Oskar Schindler, in Poland at the time of the Second World War. And he comes up with a plan to run a business employing Jewish people. and that's it. His sort of goal is to make money and become rich from obviously the war that's going on around him. And he sort of learns halfway through the film that he can save these people if they sort of work for him. Ish. I mean, that's all right, innit?
Very good.
Very good.
It's hard to do a synopsis of something that is 3 hours and 20 minutes, isn't it? But I think you've done a good job there.
That's all right, yeah.
Should we talk about the runtime? Because it is a long film.
It's a big one.
As soon as you two text me, and obviously I was watching it on my own at the flat, and you two text and said, it's 3 hours and 15 minutes. Mm. I thought, oh, I better make a start to it then.
Yeah.
Long. That's got to be one of our longest films, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Certainly.
Good, the Bad and the Ugly, probably up there.
I think that was 2 hours 50, Good, Bad and the Ugly.
2001 is 2:40, I think.
Yeah, I fell asleep in that though, so it doesn't count.
Yeah, it was 15 minutes for you. Is it a short film, 2001? Yeah, it's a big film, but there's a lot to cover. He's covering the war.
Yeah.
The whole war, really.
I mean, it's pretty extraordinary as a film that you set out to cover the war. A story that, you know, spans the whole of the war and takes you through the ghettoisation of the Jews into Auschwitz, into their extermination, into the liberation.
Yeah.
It's a pretty amazing piece of filmmaking.
I first watched this film when I was in school.
At school, yeah.
So I studied history at GCSE. It was one of the options that I took. And in year 10 and 11, the big topic that I got tested on in the end was the rise and the fall of Nazi Germany. So there was a massive, obviously I studied a lot about the Holocaust. And I remember watching this film, and when you two said last week that we were going to watch it, the only bit that I could remember was him on the balcony shooting people. That was the one bit that stuck with me. So it was almost like watching the film afresh. Because when you watch something in school, you don't really watch it, do you?
You're having a little look at that girl. You're seeing what she's doing, what she, you know.
You're texting. Swapping pencils.
What's that mean, swapping pencils?
It was football stickers in my day.
Do you want to swap a pencil? Yeah. What you got, 2B? What have you got? 4HB. Oh, okay.
So it was 1993, was it?
Yeah.
So when was the first time you watched it then, Ben? Cinema release?
Oh, crikey, that's a good question. Yeah. I was started drama school, yeah, cinema. It was captivating, really, the way it's shot. It's extraordinary, all in black and white. Mm. And the look he gets that documentary look out of the film to make it look like
real footage.
Yeah.
When I watched it in school, I just watched it as a black and white movie, and I thought it was about history. So I didn't really pay attention to it as a film.
Yeah.
Now watching it from the eyes for the podcast and after being educated by you two for the last, you know, 2 years.
Yeah.
It's a completely different film that I watched yesterday. Obviously, it's choice to be in black and white, which the first time I watched it, I never realised. And I didn't quite realise about the cast. So I saw everything differently. Like,
yeah.
I mean, Voldemort has always been a baddie in my life, always, for many reasons. Now I don't think I'll watch Harry Potter the same because he's even worse in my...
But a complete unknown at the time, both weren't they?
Mm. Yeah. All three of them as well, British actors, aren't they?
Yeah, to not have that big star at the front of it. And I think that's what they wanted, but Spielberg wanted someone you wouldn't know. And I think that makes the film even more powerful.
So let's talk more about the plot of the movie.
Yeah.
The first bit that like really got me and paid attention to me was when they're in the dance hall and you kind of meet Oskar Schindler for the first time, don't you?
Yeah.
You see a very well-dressed, smart young man who kind of just he doesn't fit in the crowd he's in. He's in a crowd with Nazi soldiers and he looks like a businessman. He looks slick and he does a very clever thing of getting people's attention. And he works that first general over to his table, doesn't he? By buying him a drink, getting the guy to come over, pulling him a chair. It's just smooth and it's very slick. And as soon as I was watching that, I was like, that's clever.
Mm.
Instantly, you know that he's a clever character. And then by the end of that party, there's that shot of the other soldier walking in, and his table has gone from him being sat on it on his own to having 30 people on there singing, dancing, you know. And basically, he has paid his way in the hierarchy of like the Nazi party, hasn't he?
Yeah.
It's the charisma that he's got, isn't it?
And also, the war is about to start and there's money to be made. He knows there's money to be made out of war. And those guys are going to be the ones that are going to hand out all the contracts for him to make certain things, big, big money.
He has that great line later on in the film. It's probably a good hour and a half, 2 hours into the film. But he says, I think it's to his wife, he says, there's three things wrong with the businesses that I've tried to do before. There's three reasons that they've failed. He says, reason one's this, reason two's that, and reason three is there wasn't a war. And it's like, from that, you know, he has profited from the war.
Yeah.
And he has worked out a plan of how he isn't going to go and fight. He's going to get rich. And he knows how he's going to do it. And then that's what kind of makes the film stumble into something so beautiful, really, because his sole intention is to make money, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Also, you realise when the Jews are taken and ghettoised and taken out of their houses, he immediately takes one of their houses, doesn't he? One of their flats.
At the beginning, yes.
With their stuff in. It's so interesting, isn't it? Because you see a Nazi soldier and you see them like that and you're thinking, is he tricking them? Is he repulsed? Because I'm repulsed.
Yeah.
And he's not.
No.
He's being friendly to them, drinks, they end up singing.
He's very level, isn't he? He doesn't cringe at what they do.
No, because I suppose at the start now, he's like treating them, well, you're going to be the ones that are going to pay me. But then when the way he walks in and sits on that, lies on that bed, and they've just been taken out of that flat. It's a huge film, but it's a huge move in a character, isn't it? It's massive that he is completely and utterly making money out of war and death.
Yeah, so he comes up with this idea, doesn't he, to run a factory making pots and pans.
The problem he's got no money.
No.
So he's got no collateral at all, has he? That's what you get. He's a spiv in a way. He's got the suit, he's got the smile, but he ain't got the backing.
Yeah.
And he knows that the businessmen that are in the ghetto do have money.
Yes.
I like that bit where they obviously can't do business in the ghetto. It's, you know, war is happening and they only know it's going to get worse. And he has that scene where he walks into the church, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And they're all doing business.
It's a Catholic church.
Yeah. Very, very clever. They're all doing their business in the church.
Yeah.
And he sits there and he turns around and he says, where can I get a shirt like that? And everybody leaves. And that's kind of when he starts to suss out where he's going to make his money, what he's going to do. And he quite quickly comes across Ben Kingsley's character, doesn't he?
Well, he needs somebody to do the books, doesn't he, in the running of the factory.
And a contact.
Yeah.
He needs an in, doesn't he?
Yeah.
With the money people.
So he speaks to Ben Kingsley and he says, the people in the ghetto, they're going to bring me the money. The Jewish people living there, they're going to pay to work in my factory. I'm going to give them a job and I'm going to pay them in like pots and pans and things like that, doesn't he? So they're buying the company, but they're not getting the company. They're not paying to work. They're paying to live, basically.
Yeah.
And he basically says, money's going to get you nowhere now. It's all about trade because life is about to change. And obviously, this is a tough one, but you couldn't imagine in them ghettos like what was to come in the state of war, could you? Because you only knew so much from like the news and the radio and... Like, for them, it's a complete gamble, and it's a, you know, it's almost an trying to do a deal with the devil, is what it seems like. But he gets his business going.
Yeah, he employs about 350 people, doesn't he? And basically, they get a pass to those Jewish people that because they work for a German, for a Nazi, they're seen as his Jews. So he owns them. So they're not allowed to be, you know, sent to Auschwitz or anywhere else, or even executed. They're Schindler's Jews, so they work for him.
But they go through that bit with Ben Kingsley's character redefining what people do. So people come up and say they're musicians or artists, and he goes, no, you're not. You're a metal worker. You need to have a skill
to survive.
To survive and make stuff for the war effort. Because that's the other thing, I suppose, especially in Auschwitz or these other camps, these labour camps, is you have to make stuff for war. You have to make munitions. You have to make tanks. You have to make uniforms. And you need someone to do it. And you need a workforce. So he's sending pots and pans. Then in the end, he goes into munitions for the war effort, doesn't he? So all of the people in there change what they did for a living into metal workers or...
So the big changing point of the film is when you meet what Voldemort plays who?
Anon Gov.
So when Anon Gov comes to Krakow,
Voldemort.
I might have to call him Voldemort.
Imagine that. Imagine if you ever met him and went, Voldus, how are you doing, pal?
All right, mate. It's Coulson. From Corey.
But I'm sure that is fact, Ben. I'm sure out of all the roles he's ever played.
Yeah, you're right.
And, you know, the numerous times, whatever, he's been nominated for an Oscar for other parts and other films. I'm sure he's known as Voldemort wherever he goes.
Of course he is. But when his character comes into the film, that's when it's that gear change. Because in a weird way, Schindler has got everything working the way he wants it to work. He's making money. Ben Kingsley's character is happy because he's starting to realise the bigger picture. But stuff seems to be working all right for both parties. And then the spanner in the works is his character coming in and basically building a concentration camp.
Well, the war changes, doesn't it? The look of war changes and becomes more streamlined. So they set up a lot of camps, and these camps, production camps... So he's accelerating their production, taking them out of the ghetto. And there's those awful scenes where...
They're riding the horses and they see...
Yeah, he's sort of riding. He takes people out of their houses.
Oh, when it's the liquidation, I think they call it, of Krakow,
of the ghetto.
Isn't it? Of the ghetto.
Yeah.
And you see, you know, that big wide shot of the lights going off as people are being shot inside buildings. And you see that... bit with Schindler on the horse looking down, realizing that what was a war is now right in front of his face, that people will live and die right in front of him and be shot with no thought. And they're taken out of their homes, their second home after the ghetto, and put into concentration camps. And that's what you start to see Ralph Fiennes' character become. Almost like he's part army, part general, part factory worker, factory owner. It's like a very strange mishmash. And he has that huge villa and he sets up this new concentration camp.
Schindler gets a deal with him, doesn't he? Because it does look like the beginning of the end for Oscar Schindler. But he gets in and he schmoozes him just like he schmoozed everybody else. And they develop a bit of a friendship. Which is basically, you let me do what I want to do.
He gives him a percentage, doesn't he, of money?
Yeah. And it's kind of no questions asked. As long as you're making the money, I don't care how you're making the money.
Mm.
And, you know, Schindler just moves the operation slightly and they continue. But it's in this where you really start to see a different relationship grow between Ben Kingsley's character and Oscar Schindler. Because that, for me, is the film. The film is the story between the Jewish person and the German who are seen as the hunter and the hunted. And that is an unlikely friendship that develops.
Mm.
And it doesn't develop just because of the fact they're making money. It develops because of the fact of they like each other. They're personal.
Well, I think the point is... I suppose what the Nazis tried to do was dehumanise the Jewish people. And what you see is a human relationship between Oscar Schindler and Ben Kingsley's character. You see humans connecting. Because what you do notice, what they do very cleverly with Ralph Fiennes' character, is make him almost pure evil. Like he shoots that woman who is the engineer. He shoots her because she speaks up. But he still does what she says, but he shoots them there and then. And there is this real sense that it's arbitrary. It has no reason to it. He doesn't see them as people.
No.
Well, I'll shoot you. And he does. And that's what's so... he's so extraordinary at, but it's also so chilling.
It's that shock factor, which is why I think it stuck out to me the first time I watched it. And it was like my memory of the film. But his character, like you said, Ben, he is the pinnacle of evil. But he looks great as well, doesn't he? He put on 3 stone by just drinking Guinness for that role.
Mm.
That was his diet that he went on to, like, get the body.
I did look up a picture of him, and they do resemble each other. Quite extraordinary, really.
Well, there's a famous picture of the actual man topless on the balcony with a sniper rifle, isn't there?
Right.
And that's kind of, I think, what that scene was recreating.
Apparently he did a lot more that was more horrific. He'd kill up to like 50 people a day just for maybe just being in the same presence of them. He would literally just kill them. There'd be no rhyme or reason as to why. Like, I think it did touch upon that throughout the film. But a lot of members who were actually there said that he did it more to the point there'd just be people hanging wherever you would walk in the ghetto, and he'd have done it. And Spielberg didn't want it to be in the entire film as because, well, I mean, it'd be unbearable, wouldn't it? I mean, it's bad enough the way it is.
There's a moment in the film where Schindler, it almost feels like Schindler has rubbed off on him. He's got that scene, hasn't he, where the lad is trying to clean the bathtub.
Yes.
And he can't clean it. And he started just to give people a little bit of extra chance. There's a factory worker that he can't shoot because his gun's jammed, so he lets him off.
Well, I think he lies to him, doesn't he? Oscar Schindler, what he does is, he knows how evil Amon Goeth is. So he comes to him and he says, how do you do it? Why is it that they respect you? And they think you're the almighty powerful, but they don't fear you, or you don't even have to raise a finger. Why do they give you this much respect? And I think he sends him down the river a little bit by him saying, you can just pardon people. That's power, by having the ability to kill somebody but not actually do it. And I think he says it in that way so that maybe he does it.
So he tries
it. So he tries it out for half a day, doesn't he?
Well, he didn't even try it for half a day, did he? He shot that lad on his way back, sort of thing. Yeah. Like,
but he lets the stable boy go, doesn't he? Who drops his
drops his saddle.
Lets him live, and then he goes upstairs, and he can't clean the bath. So he says, "I pardon you," and he lets him go. And then it doesn't sit right with him, does he? Like, he loses interest. He gets bored of letting people live, so he just kills him.
I suppose that. I think that's the thing that is quite extraordinary about the film is Spielberg is telling the story of these characters. The guy is purely evil, but he's got to in some way keep you able to watch the film and believe there could be a relationship between Schindler and him. I mean, how the hell do you do that in a film? Without making Ralph Fiennes' character too nice and you have sympathy, but also enough to be able to keep the film going, to believe Schindler and this character would do business and have some form of relationship. It's a very delicate balance.
The whole film kind of goes in a bizarre triangle. So Schindler is the middleman, and you've got Stern, and then you've got Voldemort, and they just, the way it all goes through Schindler, and there's that moment where he realises what he's doing, Schindler, because the person comes to him and says, can you get these two people in your factory? I've heard that your factory is like a free passage, a way to live. And he realises then that Stern is saying things that could like endanger him and put everything at risk. And that scene where he goes to be nasty to him and he can't, because there's more to it now than a business and a relationship. Like,
I don't think, I suppose, at the start that Schindler doesn't have the sense of life or death. He's not living in that place himself. No. But other people all are. Like the guy with the one arm goes to him to thank him for working there and employing him. for keeping him alive. And Schindler doesn't see that. He just sees, well, you work in a factory and I'm making money. And as it goes on, he realises it's life and death.
I think he realises he has the ability to keep people alive.
Yeah.
And whereas before he didn't. And I think Spielberg sort of tries to tell us that with the girl in the red coat.
Yeah.
Because that's what he sees when he's on the horse. And I think that's the first time he sees, oh my God, they are murdering these human beings.
Yeah.
And he sees that he's in a position where he can literally save lives like that by saying, they're now in my factory. I've saved your life. Otherwise, you would be shot in the face, or you would be gassed, or you would be hung. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think that's when his character starts to realise and change after that night, that liquidation of the ghetto.
Could any other director have told this story?
Well, Spielberg didn't want it. He first got the rights for the film in the 80s, and he didn't want to direct it because he didn't think he'd be able to direct it. He wanted to give it to somebody else.
Scorsese, I think, was going to do it.
Yes. And then Polanski. Polanski didn't want to do it because it was too close to home. His mother was murdered at Auschwitz, so he refused it. Of course, he would later go on and do The Pianist, but that's years later. So there were a few directors who turned it down, and eventually certain producers convinced Spielberg that he could do it, but he wanted to wait until he was 10 years older. So that was in 1983, and he wanted to wait until he was 47, I think.
And Universal only did the film on the basis of him doing Jurassic Park, didn't they?
Well, he said yes, he would do it if he filmed Jurassic Park first, because can you imagine directing Schindler's List, Ben, and then going to do Jurassic Park immediately after?
But he was doing the effects for Jurassic Park at night.
Yeah.
While filming Schindler's List.
So he was going home after his 12-hour days and working on Jurassic Park, doing the edit.
It's extraordinary, really.
Some films, you know how I pick films for an escape and a getaway?
Mm.
That film is a film that stays with you in the moment, and it's a film that you kind of have to be in the moment with, and that is The Purpose. But it can so easily be wrong, whereas it just holds you. But obviously, I know it has such a powerful story behind it, but the way it's filmed, the way it's acted, and, you know, how smooth it is, it has just got something about it that makes it, it lingers with you, doesn't it? It's not an easy watch.
Well, I suppose that's why it's so famous.
Yeah.
That's why it's such, probably one of the greatest films. I mean, it's an extraordinary film. How the cinematography, the characterisation, but also the story he's trying to tell. It's an enormous story to tell.
He had no storyboard for it, Ben, Spielberg.
Oh, didn't he?
He just used to stand with the camera, they'd go through the scripts, and then they'd just work out how they were going to film it. Most of it's all handheld, because he did want that feel, like you mentioned, of it being a documentary. He went, we'll just direct it sort of day to day.
Out of interest, why have you picked this film for me to watch now?
Well, it's a big one, isn't it? It's a big one, big subject, the Holocaust. And we are educating at the end of the day.
Yeah.
I think it's a film you have to see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's a film that has to be watched. And I think it was probably time in Series 3, probably you were ready to... I think if you'd put this in Series 1, it would be trickier. But already now in Series 3, you've got other films that have been of a longer length or as heavyweight. But now you're looking at, I suppose, the skill in that film, at it being 3:15, what it tells, the characterisation, the story. You're spotting things now after, you know, so many episodes that you're thinking, oh, okay, that's a choice. That camera, that look, the black and white is a choice.
Mm.
These characters, the way he's depicting them is a choice. You're seeing more about how a film is made.
Yeah, because, I mean, this is hard to say because I don't know what is right to say, I don't know what is wrong to say, but I really enjoyed watching the film.
Mm.
Is that because I was entertained, or is that because... It's hard, isn't it?
I don't think it's necessarily
entertaining. Yeah, it's fascinating.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's not
because you can't quite believe
it happened.
Yeah. It happened. And I went to Auschwitz. Actually, me and Jack made a film about his mum found out that I was Jewish and my family had changed their name. And then me and Jack made a film about someone changing their passport. And then I made another film about the guy. You know the guy when Oskar Schindler, so they get sent off to Auschwitz. He said he can save some of them. He makes the list, Schindler's list, to save them. And writes down all the names and all the money he's had, pays for each person.
Buys their lives.
And then the men go to Czechoslovakia, don't they? Back to where Schindler was from. And the women get sent to Auschwitz. And there's a soldier, he says, the women have gone to the wrong place. There's a soldier he's sitting down with and he bribes him.
Yep, with the diamonds.
With the diamonds. Now that's Rudolf Huss. Now I made a film about him. Because he had a barber, the same barber for 4.5 years, and they never talked. Now, when you go to Auschwitz and you find out what that man did and how they ran it, it's extraordinary. You know the bit where they've got all the bodies and it's all ash? They had no place to put the ash from the bodies. They couldn't get rid of the ash. It was like a factory for exterminating Jews. The sheer scale of it is what is so frightening in how they set that up. And Host actually got hanged, a bit like Ralph Fiennes' character at the end. He got hanged. But you go to there's two Auschwitz, and you go and you see a gas chamber. And then he had a villa right next to Auschwitz as well, this huge house. It's quite extraordinary. But when you're there, it's mind-blowing. It's like standing in a... And there's no sound and there's no birds. And you're right by the train track when they came in. And I think the film is telling you, you've got to witness this. It's got to stay alive. The story has to stay alive. You have to understand what was done.
That's what Spielberg said in his Oscar speech, wasn't it? He said, this is a major part of history.
Yeah.
And do not let it be history that's forgotten. Teach it, educate yourselves. And I imagine when he was making the film, it is an education. That is what that film is. And it's used in educational ways, i.e. I watched it in school. But it's so on the borderline of making you feel like you can see what's going on, but also you feel so far away from that because it's so horrific and it's so tragic. But then at the same time, the film makes you feel like you're in the midst of that destruction.
Spielberg did play with the idea of having real German and Polish actors speaking their native language and having subtitles, but then he did feel like for American audiences and you know, English-speaking audiences, it would give them an excuse to look away and just read the subtitles for the film.
Because what's interesting is when you go to Auschwitz, you see the pots and pans they took with them. You see the hair. You see the teeth, which he shows.
Mm.
It's quite extraordinary what he gets into the film, how he does that.
They gave him permission to film at Auschwitz, but he declined, saying he thought it'd be disrespectful to film a film.
Because when you go round, when you're taken round, you don't just walk round, you're taken round by someone.
At all.
Tour is going to tell you, I mean specifically, and I get this, you've got to see all of it and understand all of it and what happened. And the first thing she said to us was, you have to engage with this and remember what I'm telling you, and it's important to tell people. It's not just a tour walking round. It's important to know what was done here, and you must remember that. It's chilling.
Long time ago in another life, I was fortunate to interview one of the Holocaust survivors who was an Auschwitz survivor as well. I think she was about 101 when I got to interview her. But one of the questions that she had to answer was someone who was my age who'd been to Auschwitz, and he said that it was the first thing ever that made him realise that evil existed. Because he said that you could feel it.
Oh, when you go, there are certain things they tell you and there's certain things they show you which aren't touched in the film, which are so extraordinary.
But it's not that film though, is it?
But he does show, he very cleverly gets in, because I remember someone saying, well, why wouldn't you try and escape? And he puts bits inside the film. You remember when a chicken goes missing?
Yeah.
And they say, who is it? And they start shooting. And then the boy says, it was him.
Yeah.
Well, when they were in the camps in Auschwitz, if something went missing or something was stolen or someone tried to escape, they just shot 10 random people.
Yeah.
And it stopped it. And he does show them going off to get gassed. And in that extraordinary scene when they're below the showers and they're waiting to see whether they're going to be gassed or the water comes out.
Yeah.
Because what I didn't realise is when you go in, the train goes in and then some were taken straight away. They just get straight off and straight away they're exterminated. And the others go off to work. But he gets it in, but still maintains this story of Schindler and all this going on. I mean, it's highly skilled. Because it could have gone the other way. You could have gone and you're like, well, we're too far in that. But he balances these characters, doesn't he?
Yeah. It is an incredible film because, you know, that's what it is. It's a film. It's an education. It really just does something that I don't think I've seen before in films. I don't know what I could even try and relate it to.
And then that fascinating bit towards the end that when Schindler has saved all these people, that the war is about to end and the hunters become the hunted. And it's completely flipped that now he will be the one who's hunted down and the soldiers leave. And Spielberg still maintains, and the script still maintains that story, that now he's the one who's lost, he's given all his money, and he's facing them saying, it's over. And the way that Russian soldier sort of comes at the end on the horse and goes,
don't go east.
There you go.
don't go west.
They don't like you there. And you're like, so the war's finished. You've got no food,
no possessions,
and nowhere to go. And no one wants you.
It's like a lot of them just returned home to like their houses. And there's just other people living in them.
And they killed, I think in Auschwitz, they killed 1.1 million people. Mm. Some days he had a diary and some days he would say how exhausted he was from the work.
Because it's just too many.
He saw it as work. Yeah. It's quite extraordinary when I've gone and seen it to think, I can see why he waited 10 years.
Yeah.
You don't want to
Get it wrong.
And you want to give it proper justice, don't you? And two, you're thinking, am I good enough?
Yeah.
Am I good enough to film this? And we're still talking about it. Coulson, you weren't even born. And you're watching it and saying, you know, at 22, how much you got from it?
Shall we rate it?
Rate it.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'll go first. I first saw this film when I was about 17, quite late actually. I remember I got it from HMV.
Three movies for a tenner.
It was three movies for a tenner. It was. I got
HMV. We're coming back there, aren't we? Is that still open, HMV?
I don't know, actually.
His logic behind it was to pick the three longest films possible so he got his money's worth.
I wanted to get...
VHS?
It was DVDs. I got Schindler's List, I got Rain Man, and I got Giant.
Oh, great.
Those were the three films I got. Anyway, yeah, I think Spielberg's done a ridiculous job here, basically, directing this. It's an insane achievement, what he's done. The acting from Ralph Fiennes, Liam Neeson and Ben Kingsley, second to none. The score as well.
But the music's unbelievable.
Yeah, the story... The story's mind-boggling. One of the survivors on Schindler's List, who was on Schindler's List, he moved to America, and in the early 80s, he ran a luggage store, like selling luggage, basically. And everybody who came in, who was like a director or a producer or a writer, some sort of something to do with film, he would try and sit them down and tell them his story, how he was on Schindler's List and he was a survivor from Krakow, basically. And he would try and speak to everybody. And he spoke to the actual writer of the film, Thomas Keeley, I think he's called. And he sat him down for an hour and he told him the story of Schindler's List while he was trying to buy a suitcase on his way home. And that's what made him write the book. It was a book originally called Schindler's Ark. And I think Spielberg read the book and then acquired to take it for a film.
Wow.
But yes, I'm going to go 9.2 for me. What? Piss off. What?
Point two.
Yeah, and I think...
Point two.
I think...
Okay, right. Where's it lost?
Right.
Point eight. Because that's nearly one.
Okay.
That's nearly a nine.
It's not one of my favourite Holocaust movies. I think I prefer The Pianist.
The only other one I've seen is Boy in Striped Pyjamas.
Yeah, I didn't like that.
I made me cry. I was only about 11.
The Boy in the Striped Pyjamas is based on that guy from Auschwitz.
Yeah, but it's factually incorrect though, isn't it?
Oh, that's based on... So he...
When I made that, the guy, yeah, that's based on that guy, the Boy in Striped Pyjamas.
That's his house.
That's his house. And when you go to Auschwitz, I said, because I knew I was making this film about him, and I said to the girl, where's his house? And she took me around this corner and she went, it's there. And it is right next to, like, the garden fence is the fence of Auschwitz. And that's where he lives. So we can look over the camp. Anyway, sorry, Jack. Where's it lost? It's not your favourite.
I think it's lost just... I don't know. I think maybe Liam Neeson could have been a bit better. I don't know why.
Wow.
I don't know why. I think for me, it's Ralph Fiennes and Ben Kingsley that are up there. And I don't know. I'm nitpicking.
Yeah.
He's very, very good. Very good, don't get me wrong. But for some reason, I don't get as emotionally involved with this one as what I do, The Pianist and Saving Private Ryan and those sort of films. That's all. I mean, I do get emotional, don't get me wrong, but not as much. So that's where it's lost it slightly. Still think it's an incredible film and everybody's done a really, really good job. So well done.
Ben?
Oh, I think it's tricky. Yeah, I saw this film a long time ago and it really stuck with me. I think it's a different film now I'm older. It's a different film knowing what happened to my family changing their name, their Jewish name, and going to Auschwitz and actually seeing it. I think there's two bits in my head here. There's the film and a filmmaker. Spielberg is a filmmaker and the film he's made. Black and white. The look. The sound. The story he's told. And the subject matter and the performances. For me, it's Ben Kingsley. For me, I think it's an incredibly nuanced performance. And I think Ralph Fiennes is very, very good because he doesn't flinch from being that. For me, that scene where he's got the maid at the bottom, it is chilling.
Yeah.
Is chilling being with this man who will kill you. Eventually, he will kill you. But I think having been and seen that, it hit me this time. It definitely did. I think a 10? Yeah, I can't see it any other way. I think it's an extraordinary film. And I think very, very few people could have made it to still have those relationships at the end, to still have Liam Neeson breaking down, to still have this feeling of relief as you've gone through the whole of this war. I mean, that's extraordinary filmmaking. And then the very end where the survivors put the stones onto the grave, he brings you back into the present and back into the now, which, yeah, 10.
As soon as I watched it, I rated it and I had it in my head all the way through. And sometimes I change my rating during the podcast, but I want to stick with my initial rating. So it's 9. But when you turn around and ask me your next question, which is why is it not a 10? I really don't know.
Did you connect with it emotionally?
It didn't make me cry, but I completely found it horrific. And I appreciated the fact that I would never be able to understand what that was or what people had to go through. And I just found it uncomfortable, which I think is... I've not felt that in a film, basically. You know, it's... You know, horrors make you scared. Happy films make you happy. That film made me uncomfortable. It made me ask questions to myself. It really does such a job of such a tragic, horrific story. Just what it does to that story, the way it tells it.
It's a film with another purpose as well, isn't it? It's a film, but it's also a film that had to be, that has to be seen, that has to be told. It's a story that had to be told. And he wanted to tell it.
And it, in terms of what this podcast is and what this podcast was set out to do, it is absolutely that to the book. It's a film that I should have seen. You know, it's an education. It's a statement piece. And it's brilliant in so many ways. It's 9 out of 10 for me. So that's a big rating. We've got 28.2.
That's big.
28.2 is big.
I wondered what you're going to hit. Woof! That 0.2 is going to live.
You know when I say it's not an easy film to watch?
No, it's not.
Do you know like how this podcast has almost been quite
difficult to listen to?
Yeah. I imagine it will be. It's been difficult for us to record, but it is a subject that is uncomfortable.
But it's also, it's probably like it's a film that had to be made, and it is a film that we should pick and we should talk about, even though it is uncomfortable. Mm. We should be talking about these kind of things, because that level of filmmaking is extraordinary. It stands up. You know, we talk a lot about on this podcast, don't we? Films not quite standing up, or we saw them when we were younger and they didn't quite work now. Film stands up.
Mm.
That cinematography, the acting, it still feels very, very present. And yeah, we've picked it, but we probably did need a few series in to get, probably to let you in there, Coulson, to have seen... Probably to get bored to tears by 2001 and then come to this film seeing a bit more of what, you know, appreciating that.
So we have proved on Sofa Cinema Club that we can do pretty much every type of film ever. So in true Sofa Cinema Club style, it's back to the audience vote.
Oh, crikey.
So it's
a segue.
It's a big jump. It's a big jump. So semi-finals: Around the World in 80 Days versus Teen Wolf. Never seen that.
Oh, Teen Wolf, absolute banger. I love that.
And then the semi-final was Erin Brockovich.
What?
Erin Brockovich. Brickvick. Erin Brickvick. Erin Orange. Brockovich.
Erin
Brickvick. I love that. Hello. Calling Erin Brickvick. I don't know why I keep saying this. Erin Brickvick. Oh, she's not turned up. Brockovich.
Versus Clockwork Orange.
Yeah. Boom. Banger.
The final.
Yes.
Went down to the classic that is Team Wolf.
Yeah.
Versus Erin
Brockovich.
Brockovich.
Yeah, perfect.
And the winner, ooh, by 100 votes, was the film that I can't say, Erin Brockovich.
Erin Brockovich.
Brockovich, hello.
So I've not got a clue what that is, what it's about. Not a clue.
It's good film. Good. It's good. Great. Film. Good film. Great film. Good pick. Some good picks there.
That's what we're watching next week. I look forward to having an audience member giving us a synopsis.
Ah, yes. Good one. Yeah. Well, that's, yeah. Good. Great. Mint.
So join us next week where we're talking all things Erin Brockovich.
Brickvick.
In the meantime, keep in touch with us on social media at Sofa Cinema Club on Twitter and Instagram. And yeah, all that's left to say is happy birthday, Jack.
Thank you. Yes.
Good night. God bless.
Good night. God bless.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Listen to this Acast show ad-free on Amazon Music with your Prime membership or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.